cab and its rear bed, where a dozen peacekeeper troops and the 7 suicide volunteers sat wedged together like sardines in a tin. "Where is the confirmation from L1? Jiap demanded of the tech sergeant in charge of communications. The sergeant said through the upraised visor of his spacesuit, "L1 wants to speak to you, sir." With an impatient huff, Jiap took the laptop comm rig from the sergeant. "We are scheduled to push off in 3 minutes," he said sharply. "Where is the confirmation of the nuclear blast?" The officer's image in the small, snow-streaked screen looked strained, worried. "There is no confirmation of the blast, sir," she said, her voice scratchy with static. "No confirmation?" "Diagnostics are negative," the officer said dolefully. "And there is no visual confirmation of the detonation." Jiap demanded, "Did the bomb go off or not?" "As far as we can tell, sir, it failed."
"Failed?
Then Moonbase's electrical power system is still intact."
"As far as we can tell, sir."
Jiap angrily slammed the laptop shut and shoved it back into the sergeant's gloved hands. "It doesn't matter," he told himself. "It would be better if their electrical power was cut off, but it really doesn't matter. We will march across the mountains and blast open their airlocks if they refuse to surrender to me." He held up his wrist again. At precisely the second called for in his schedule, he commanded, "Start engines! All vehicles are to move to their assigned locations on the crater floor. Go!" Grins and thumbs-up gestures filled the control center. The overhead lights were back to full brightness.
"It didn't go off!"
Ginny Anson crowed, exultant, almost jumping up and down.
"Wixon did it," said Doug, still only half believing it.
O'Malley got up from the chair beside him.
"I'm going to check out the dust dispersal systems one more time. Looks like we'll need 'em now."
He was grinning broadly as he strode out of the control center.
"Put through a call to Wixon," Anson said. "We ought to congratulate him."
Doug nodded, but asked, "How much damage did the warhead do when it hit the ground?" A technician's voice answered, "The bird bullseyed on the central solar farm, knocked out 11 panels and the main feeder line. Our power capacity is down by 2%.
"We can live with that," Anson said quickly.
Yes, Doug thought. We can live with that. We can even fight with that. In the tight confines of the editing booth, Edith had followed the telescope view of the incoming missile warhead, holding her breath, not daring to speak. But when she saw no flash of an explosion and the warhead clunked into the middle of one of the arrays of solar panels spread across the ground, she whooped an involuntary Texas victory yell.
"It didn't go off,"
she said into her headset microphone, hovering a centimeter from her lips.
"Moonbase's missile defense system worked."
She reached out across the control board and activated a chip that held a pre-recorded interview with Wixon, explaining how the particle beam accelerator at the mass driver could be turned into a beam gun. While the canned interview played out, Edith checked with Doug at the control center.
"He's on another call," said the comtech.
From the radiant smile on the technician's face, Edith knew that she'd been right. The nuclear warhead hadn't exploded.
"I just want confirmation from him that the nuke didn't go off," Edith explained.
"It didn't."
"Yeah, right. But I need to get his handsome face on Global Network for the whole world to see him saying it didn't go off."
"I'll give him your message."
"Do that,"
Edith snapped, feeling nettled. But then she thought, Doug must be up to his scalp in snakes. He won't have time for the news media. She put through a call to Wixon out at the mass driver instead.
"I swear to you, Joanna, I knew nothing of this," said Ibrahim al-Rashid.
He was perched nervously on one of the upholstered chairs in Joanna's living room. It was 2 in the morning. Rashid looked baggy-eyed, his clothes hurriedly thrown on. The house was still swarming with police and Masterson Corporation security people. Lev's body had been taken away, zippered into a black body bag. His murderer's body, cut almost in half by the submachine gun bullets that had killed him, remained up in her bedroom while the police and security team took fingerprints and photographs.
"He was a Masterson security guard," Joanna said, her voice venomously low. "He was trying to kill me."
"Joanna," Rashid said, almost pleading,
"you can't believe that I had anything to do with this."
I don't know what to believe, she replied, staring hard at him. She was sitting tensely on the sofa, still wearing nothing more than the silk robe she had pulled on upstairs.
He must have been a new morality fanatic, Rashid said.
Or an assassin from Yamagata.
No. Why would Yamagata want you assassinated?
I don't know, Joanna said tightly. I intend to find out.
I'm so sorry about Lev, Rashid said, his head drooping. I liked him.
He looked familiar to me, Joanna murmured.
Familiar?
The security guard. The assassin. He'd been around the house for several days, and I thought that somehow he looked familiar, but I couldn't place where I'd seen him before.
Are you sure?
I should have told the security chief then and there, Joanna said in a choked whisper, speaking more to herself than to Rashid. I should have realized something wasn't right.
It isn't your fault, Rashid said. She focused her gray-green eyes on him like a pair of guns.
Then whose fault is it?
Not mine, Rashid fairly yelped. Joanna, I know we've had our differences over corporate policy, but I would never... I mean, something like this.
Joanna leaned back against the sofa's soft pillows. I want to believe you, Omar. I hope you're telling me the truth.
Rashid swallowed visibly. There was nothing he could say to erase the suspicion in her eyes.
Mrs. Brudnoy, Captain Ingersoll called from the dining room doorway. She looked up at him.
Yes? What is it?
Stepping slowly, hesitantly into the living room, Ingersoll held up a hand-sized computer.
I think we've made a positive ID on the killer.
Who is it?
Aiming his handset at the window wall screen above the fireplace, Ingersoll said, We ran a computer check on his fingerprints.
The big screen atop the mantel showed two sets of inky whorls. He used to work for the corporation years ago, mostly up at Moonbase. The fingerprints were replaced by two photographs, both ID pictures, taken 25 years apart.
Jack Killifer, Joanna gasped.
That's his name, Ingersoll agreed, nodding. The photo on the right was taken when he joined our security department a few weeks ago. You can see he trimmed down his hair, darkened it, and grew a mustache.
Jack Killifer, she repeated. He's hated me all these years. Hated me enough to kill me.
You think his motivation was personal then? Ingersoll asked. She glanced at Rashid before answering. The man looked puzzled. Of course, Joanna realized, Omar doesn't know anything about Killifer or his history.
Yes,
she said to Ingersoll.
Personal.
Can you tell me something about it? The captain asked.
Tomorrow, Joanna said. Call me tomorrow, around noon.
Because we still got a problem here, Ingersoll went on, slow, measured, not easily deterred.
A problem?
The other security guard, Rodriguez.
The one who shot Killifer?
Yes'm. He's nowhere to be found. Apparently took off for parts unknown. We found the stutter gun he used. He left it on the kitchen table nice and neat. But his car is gone and him with it.
Rashid's brows knit.
Why would he run away?
That's what I'd like to know, said Ingersoll.
Tomorrow,
Joanna said firmly. Ingersoll seemed to think it over for a heartbeat or two, then nodded and walked back into the dining room.
Omar, thanks for coming over,
Joanna said to Rashid.
I'm sorry if it looked as if I suspected you. It's been a terrible few hours.
Rashid knew he was being dismissed, and he felt grateful for it. Getting to his feet, he asked, Will you be all right? Do you need anything?
My doctor's here, she said, remaining seated on the sofa. He's already dosed me with tranquilizers and God knows what else. He'll stay here in the house, and there are the servants, of course.
Of course, Rashid murmured, eager to get away, glad that the burning fury of her suspicion had passed over him. Joanna summoned the butler, who accompanied Rashid to his car, then returned to the living room. What else can I do for you? He asked.
Nothing, she said. That's all for now. Go get yourself some sleep.
And you?
I'll sleep here, Joanna said.
I've had the guest suite prepared for you, the butler suggested.
She shook her head. No,